Last case for argument is Staples versus Pepsi-Cola. Mr. Saltzman.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Robert M. Saltzman, and I represent the appellant, Alvin Staples. Your Honors, this case is before the court after, at the district court level, a motion for summary judgment was denied. And after I began trying the case, which took 4 or 5 days, the judge denied a motion for directed verdict. And then the judge allowed the case to go to the jury. And the jury, after a day, could not reach a decision and were hung. The visiting judge, Judge Walters from Louisiana, reset the case for trial in November. And then, of course, to my shock and my clients, he then, after the defendant, Pepsi-Cola, the appellee, filed its motion for a judgment, gave the verdict to them. This is not a complex case. It's a question of determination of facts. The court's well aware of the standard of review in this matter, and the evidence is clear and succinct where there's a substantial question of disputed material fact that the appellant, Alvin Staples in this case, proved that he was meeting the company's expectations and proved that he was evaluated differently than the rest of the non-African-American employees. What is interesting in the case is that if they say he wasn't living up to expectation, then no one in his group or who was similarly situated was living up to expectation. And also, more importantly, the proof that there was a non-pretextual basis for their termination is not substantiated by evidence other than the self-serving hearsay of the two witnesses who testify. During cross-examination, I repeatedly went over, where is the substance other than the chart that you have drawn and placed into this courtroom? They no longer had...
Well, your opponent accuses you of having submitted a very distorted statement of fact. Do you have any response? They say, I mean, just picking at random. You said in your brief, Mr. Staples testified to the races of other salespeople. And they claim, no, there was no testimony about race.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear your voice drop and I didn't hear it. They said that Mr. Staples testified to what?
Well, you said in your brief, Mr. Staples testified to the races of other salespeople. They say in their brief, that's incorrect, that you did not present any evidence about the races.
It's circumstantial and inferential, Your Honor. There was objections during the trial of what we thought would be explicit statements of racism. However, there was one comment made, and I presented it to the jury that way, that an African-American was brought in, who had never supervised anybody before, to terminate Mr. Staples. After the termination,
your brief was that Mr. Staples testified to the races of other salespeople.
It was by inference, Your Honor, and I apologize, and if counsel may be correct if they're taking that argument to its fullest extent. It's the basis of what took place on there, that there was racism. We have one African-American supervisor. That is an argument. This whole case was circumstantial, Your Honor.
You're having appended to your brief a summary of testimony.
Yes, sir.
What is the basis for your doing that? That's just extending your brief. I don't get that.
Your Honor, the evidence here is all circumstantial as to what took place.
Well, there we don't permit people to have appendixes summarizing.
I agree with you 100%, and I cannot, as I stand here now, and explain the error to you. This is not the first time that I have handled an appeal, and I have no explanation for you because I do not know the page reference that you're referring to. But if there's no clear statement of that, then I stand corrected, and it should be withdrawn. This was not done for any misleading purpose or to exploit or distort the record. The record is clear for all the denials and all the contradictions that were made during the testimony by the witnesses for the defendant. When they were asked, why did you use different criteria, they had no explanation for it. And that was what I believe the jury came upon. We had the African-American, non-African-American people who were not judged on the same criteria.
Well, how do we know they're white?
That's part of the appendix and part of it on the those materials that are placed within the record, Your Honor. There was substantial evidence. I cannot point to the page number, but Dobbins, the man that he was weighed against and who he outperformed substantially, was white. Mr. Staples was the only African-American in the group that was similarly situated, Your Honor. No one else. He had been at the company for 12 years. And in this instance, when they couldn't offer other than their own statements that, well, he didn't perform to our expectations, it isn't sufficient and isn't proper, and it doesn't meet the standard that the trial court is supposed to give a verdict to the defendant under the circumstances, because no one else was performing up to expectation. He was the only one judged on 6 out of 11 criteria, or 5 out of 9. They had no expectation. They had no explanation of that at all, Your Honor. This was not a case where someone said, we're going to get rid of him because he's African American. I thought the hardest part of my case was explaining to the jury was how they would bring in a black person to terminate another African American. And I think the jury saw through the charts, which were not supported by anything. Your Honor, the brief is there. I'm going to save the rest of whatever time I have for rebuttal. It's not a complex matter. The only question is, should the court allow a new trial under the substantial contradictions that exist in this record, and we went way beyond proof of a prima facie case, and they did not offer any evidence to support that their termination was not pretextual in nature. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Solomon. Mr. Morrison?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John P. Morrison. I represent the Appley Pensacola General Bottlers. Initially, in reaction to your first question, there is no evidence in the record as to the rate of any of the other sales representatives. This was not something that was objected to. The objections dealt with races of promotions of other people not related to this position. There just never was the question, never was the answer.
So in this case, what you're saying is the jury, nor the judge, nor this court has an idea of what the other salespeople races were?
That is correct. They were not witnesses. The witnesses were the two decision makers and Mr. Staples and then another manager that was there, but nobody asked the question. Here the evidence of non-discrimination was overwhelming, consistent, and uncontradicted. The evidence of discrimination is non-existent. Mr. Staples was a salesman. His job was to sell product to new and existing customers and to make money in doing so. Consistent with our practice, he and the other three sales representatives were given identical goals at the beginning of the sales year, which started in roughly December of 1995. The territories they covered had identical amounts of existing volume in that. Hence, according to the sales manager, that gave identical opportunities. They were graded at mid-year on identical forms using identical standards. They all had obligations to get certain new accounts of existing volume, 500 or 1,000 gallons per year, and some other other various objectives. At mid-year, Mr. Staples was clearly the worst performer. His performance was abysmal compared to his objectives that he was given at the beginning of the year. He was, at that time, only accomplishing one-third of his prorated objectives in bringing in new large accounts. He had 4 500-gallon accounts when his year-end objective was 25. He had 3 1,000-gallon accounts when his year-end objective was 15. He brought in no rental accounts. His account calls were only 7.8 per day when he was supposed to be seeing 10. Not surprisingly, at mid-year, he was placed on a performance plan. Probation. He was told specifically in writing and given a letter that if you don't improve, you may be terminated. And you will be judged on these six criteria that he was judged on at that time. So at the end of the third quarter, they judged him on those six criteria that they spelled out in the probation letter that he would be judged on. And he did not come close to improving. In fact, his performance got significantly worse because he made no sales to any large accounts after that. Hence, he's even farther behind on his prorated objectives. He's now down to 23%. He had two rental accounts, both of which failed because he didn't collect the rent, and the customers went ceased doing any business with Pepsi. He did not increase his sales calls. They still were at 7.8 per day. He couldn't even do that to increase them to 10 per day as he was required. The other sales rep.
Are these calls in person or telephone calls?
In person. They're expected to make both a combination of new sales calls and maintenance calls, which are calls to existing customers, to come up to 10 per day. Mr. Staples' counsel complained that the other sales representatives at the end of the third quarter were judged on different criteria. Well, they had 11 criteria on there, 8 of which were identical to the ones that Mr. Staples was judged on. Some were broken out into two categories. Sales calls, for instance, they were broken down into maintenance calls and new sales calls, whereas Mr. Staples, they were added together. Accounts, the other sales representatives were judged on accounts of 500 or less, or excuse me, 500 or more and 1,000 or more. Mr. Staples were lumped together.
How large a territory was Ms. Long supervising, and what part was geographically located?
This is 1996 performance year. In her area of her area of management of the four district sales of the four sales representatives went covered the entire city of Chicago plus neighboring north, northeast, west, southwest, south suburbs. Mr. Staples' territory was essentially the southern territory and into the southwest. There was a loop territory that geographically.
It's a huge area for one person to cover, isn't it?
Sure. It's a large area. All the areas are large. There was a loop territory which had.
How many customers does Pepsi-Cola have in that area?
I have no idea, Your Honor. And he's not expected. And this is just the on-premise sales where he is going to restaurants and things like that that serve Pepsi on-premises, typically fountain drinks. By the end of the third quarter, he's abysmal. The exhibits in the record are clear and uncontradicted. He's not coming close to meeting any of his goals. We put in records of all of the other sales representatives that show that they're making anywhere from 75% to 200% more than Mr. Staples on those very same goals. Mr. Staples admits his performance was not satisfactory. There is no evidence in the record of any discrimination whatsoever. In fact, there are powerful inferences of non-discrimination. The two decision makers are Keith Powell, who hired Mr. Staples to begin with, and then brought Mr. Staples into his department when Mr. Staples was otherwise going to be terminated from the company. And then Gloria Long, who was the direct supervisor or manager, was also African-American. Mr. Staples would have us believe that she was brought in explicitly to terminate Mr. Staples under cover of race and that somehow that would survive. But there's no evidence of anything suggesting that. There simply is no evidence, not even a mere scintilla, no evidence whatsoever of discrimination. Yes, Ms. Long had not supervised people at Pepsi before. In order to become a supervisor at some point in time, you haven't supervised people before. She had supervised another job, and that's in the record, but not at Pepsi. So Mr. Staples' counsel somehow suggests that because you bring in somebody who was the top sales rep up the year before in that department to become the supervisor, that somehow is some code word for discrimination. She clearly wasn't the hatchet man. Mr. Staples himself admits, and he has never accused her of any racist or discriminatory behavior. That's the counsel's statement. Mr. Staples did have one good category. He was excellent in this FCB, which is frozen carbonated beverage, essentially a flush type of product, which was the least profitable of the various categories that Pepsi judged their people on that year. It was a new product. They were trying to make a push. Mr. Staples did have one account across from the Robert Taylor home, which was responsible for a huge amount of product. But he never sold any other accounts than that product. So while he did get an unsatisfactory in his final evaluation on that, it was because between mid-year when he was placed on probation and when he was terminated at the end of the third quarter, he had not improved at all. His performance was abysmal. There's nothing, and we have in the record the reviews of all of the other sales representatives. We have in the record comparisons in charts, many of which were not objected to, and in joint exhibits we have other records showing what the volume of sales were, what the volumes of accounts were, and Mr. Staples was clearly not meeting his objective. He doesn't. He concedes he wasn't, and he wasn't even close.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morrison. Salzman, how much time did he have? 3 minutes.
Contrary to counsel, Beverly Long, the supervisor, was not the leading producer. She had never even been in that area. She had separate accounts. She was brought in and sent out after the termination. There's no evidence that Mr. Staples saw any letter in January of 1996, and Beverly Long said there was nothing to substantiate that he saw the letter. In fact, contrary to policy, the letter allegedly that he was supposed to see wasn't even signed by him. So the first knowledge that he may have had that he was deficient in any one area was in July of 96, 3 months before his termination. The bottom line, Your Honor, is that the witnesses for Pepsi-Cola couldn't substantiate anything when I asked them questions such as Your Honor just put to counsel about the size of the area and so forth. And Mr. Staples did testify, and the judge did grab onto that, that the change of his territory was not discriminatory. We've never even argued that point. The totality of the circumstances were, though, his numbers, when that portion taken into consideration, he was judged differently. And getting back to the original question about the evidence, I thought clearly that the records and that the testimony was clear that who was African-American and who might have been Spanish-American and who might have been white, and I was going through my brief during the argument and I can't find the reference to it. But I do remember those questions, and the totality of the record will substantiate that in this instance, all these numbers that they brought up were not borne out by anything, by any evidence, other than their own self-serving statements. When I asked Beverly Long to interpret for me, she couldn't do it. We saw charts. I objected to certain charts. Some I didn't object to. But I did cross-examine and point that out to the jury that the material in there wasn't substantiated by anything. And in conclusion, Your Honor, I think when the court takes a look at the material, they will see that in this instance, the standard of review requires that this matter be sent back for a new trial. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.